True Crime Brewery contains disturbing content related to real-life crimes. Medical information is opinion based on facts of a crime and should not be interpreted as medical advice or treatment. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to True Crime Brewery. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick.
In 2017, 45-year-old Lloyd Nyreiter told his 19-year-old daughter, Carrie, that he couldn't afford to pay child support to her mother, Michelle, anymore. He shared his Plan A and Plan B with Carrie. He could either murder Carrie's mother, or he'd take his own life. Lloyd was definitely leaning toward murdering Michelle, but he couldn't do it alone. He said he needed help. Join us at the quiet end for The Good Daughter. Carrie Nyreiter was a successful college student, due to graduate in just 1 year, when she agreed to help her father get away with the murder of her mother. She assisted in the setup, an alibi, the cover-up, and in getting her 14-year-old sister out of the way. Today we're talking about the Nyreiter family dynamics, Lloyd's cold-blooded plans, and the reasons why Carrie made the choices that she did.
So we have a nice New York beer for today. It's called Sapsquatch, and it's brewed by Southern Tier Brewing Company. This is an American barley wine, a big hitter, 14.9% alcohol by volume.
Yes, I've actually set 3 hours aside for a nap post-recording.
Good.
So I'm right on top of it.
So this beer is a reddish-brown color without any real head to it. Very boozy aroma with some maple syrup, toffee, vanilla, and oak. And you take a sip, and the bourbon's the first thing that you notice, followed by maple syrup and toffee, then some oak and vanilla, and bourbon at the end. Well, this is a very, very nice beer, but it's meant to be sipped and shared, so go easy on it, guys.
All right, let's open it up. All right, down here at the quiet end, going to drink a heavy hitter today, so I'm looking forward to that. Plus, this is a case I've known about for a while. It was recommended to us by Jose M., and he said that it was a really fascinating case, and he was correct.
Yeah, there's someone else who recommended it also.
Yes, there probably is, but I usually just give credit to the first person that sends it to us, because some cases we do get a lot of recommendations for.
Well, this one was something that more than one person wanted to hear about.
Yes, so. I'm giving credit to Jose because Jose was first.
All right, I'm already having a tough time getting my head around a father telling his daughter that he needed her help to murder their mother.
I know.
Just amazing.
It's very shocking. It's just a heavily fractured family dynamic. And that's what I really want to be able to talk about here. But first, we need the facts.
Okay, here are the facts. Michelle met her future husband, Lloyd, in high school in 1989. Now, the relationship became serious very quickly. Lloyd was 19 and Michelle was 20 when they got married in 1991. They both went on to college and then they moved to Corning in upstate New York, and they lived there in a small farmhouse. Lloyd worked for Corning Glass as a design engineer. It's the big industry in Corning.
Well, I'm just impressed that they got married that young and they still had the wherewithal to go to college and get their degrees. I'm impressed with that.
Pretty cool.
It is.
They had 3 daughters together. Carrie was the middle child. Michelle would eventually take a job teaching at a local college, but she was a stay-at-home mom to her 3 daughters for several years before she got back into the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Lloyd was very active in his daughters' lives. For example, he took them to their ballet classes on Saturdays, sitting with all of the mothers as he brushed the girls' hair and put it up into buns. But Lloyd was kind of overbearing, and he likely did the girls' hair at the ballet studio because it brought him a lot of positive attention. I would second that thought.
Oh, sure. I mean, that place was almost all women.
Yeah.
So he was probably just lapping up the attention.
Oh, I'll bet. Now, he was the only father who attended these classes. So many of the other mothers admired him, and thought he was this charismatic, really hot guy. But he was strict with his daughters, and he sometimes would blow up at them over minor issues. He was also witnessed slapping the girls in their faces more than once, and he was very controlling. So according to family and friends, Lloyd began to criticize and speak down to his wife as their years went by. He would disparage her, smiling as if it was all in fun, but it did hurt Michelle's feelings.
Yeah, that's a pet peeve of mine, the backwards comment, right?
Oh, yeah, with a smile.
Right? Yeah, right.
It's always accompanied with a smile.
And then you can just say, oh, I'm just kidding. Why are you hurt? Yeah, I hate that. Well, a couple of the other ballet moms did become friends with Lloyd. They saw him as eccentric and very friendly. When asked about Michelle, he said that Saturdays were her days off. Michelle had a master's degree in literature, but she had chosen to be a full-time mom for many, many years. And in addition to caring for the family, she homeschooled her daughters, and she was very involved in helping the homeless and in providing food for a food kitchen at her church. So around Thanksgiving of 2007, Michelle suddenly stopped speaking with her parents. Michelle's mom believed that Lloyd was behind this and had threatened her or the children if she didn't go along, because they hadn't had an argument or anything, according to Michelle's mom. But she knew that Lloyd was very controlling, and he didn't want Michelle to have any place to go if she decided to leave him. Some saw his behavior as a husband as incredibly emotionally abusive to Michelle. And as a father, he behaved kind of like a cult leader, getting his daughters to cling to him and turning them against their own mother. And it turned out he was pretty skilled at doing this.
He was a good manipulator. Now, according to Michelle's mother, Michelle was surprised when Lloyd came home one day and asked for a divorce. Now, they had been through some rough times during a recession, and Lloyd lost his job at Corning in 2008, and then he took a position in Princeton, New Jersey, and Michelle stayed with the girls at their house in Corning. Now, this long-distance marriage put a strain on the Knight Rider marriage. The divorce seemed kind of out of the blue to Michelle's mother and sister, but the marriage had been in trouble for quite some time.
It definitely seems like it had been a long time coming. But after the divorce, Michelle sold the farm, and their oldest daughter went to live with Lloyd in New Jersey, while Carrie and her little sister stayed with Michelle in a new house. Through her high school years, Carrie's relationship with her mother became tense. It just really seemed to go downhill. They argued often over rules and curfews. In 2013, Lloyd was trying to get full custody of their children. And according to Michelle's attorney, he was relentless in using the legal system to harass Michelle. Post-divorce, Lloyd submitted over 20 legal filings. He repeatedly filed false claims against Michelle. He was really trying to get out of paying child support, which was over $5,000 a month, which is really hard to believe. It's a large amount of money.
That's a ton of money.
It is. So I don't know. Maybe he owed some back support or alimony. Who knows? But that's what he was paying her. And he was trying to stop doing that. He was also trying to turn the kids against Michelle. Their oldest daughter was already living with Lloyd, and Carrie was in college. But he was still persisting in trying to get full custody of their youngest daughter. But a really sad part of this is they only had 4 more years until the youngest daughter would be 18. So I don't know what the big hurry was to have to stop paying that money or to try and get custody of her.
Well, I can imagine trying to stop paying the money. Maybe his job isn't paying him as much. I mean,
yes, but when something like that happens, you can usually go to the court, and I think they're quite reasonable about having you pay a certain percentage.
And he certainly was no stranger to the courtroom.
No. That's why I wonder if he owed her back money on the house or something like that.
Yeah, something's got to be there.
Yeah, yeah. So the Knight Rider divorce and custody case just went on and on. There was so much back and forth that everyone working at the courthouse became quite familiar with the case. It was getting quite a reputation.
Then in August 2017, Carrie graduated high school and was a student at the Rochester Institute of Technology in Rochester, New York. She was living on campus and studying engineering, just like her father had. And at this point in 2017, she just had one more year of college. So at that point, Lloyd came to her, told her he was deeply in debt, and there's just no way out, and he's going to kill himself. But then he said, I got a plan B. And plan B was that he could kill Michelle, and his financial problems would be solved. So there goes the child support payment. That's $60,000 a year. And he could get $250,000 in life insurance, because he was still the beneficiary on a policy that Michelle had. In order to do all this stuff, he was going to need Carrie's help.
So then in late August, Lloyd did something completely out of character. He didn't show up for his court appearance for a petition for sole custody of their youngest child. He didn't ask for an adjournment, and he didn't withdraw. He just didn't show up, and he didn't answer his phone calls from the court. So because he was a no-show, the case was dismissed, so it was in Michelle's favor, and Michelle was very relieved and happy that day. Michelle was celebrating. She took her daughter and her friends out on a warm, sunny day and video recorded them as they slid down a grassy hill on big blocks of ice. So she should have been very happy that day. Things were going her way, even though she had told her attorney, I don't understand why he didn't show up. It was just not something he'd ever done. He was the one that had filed all these court actions.
Yeah, and this is a big one. This is custody.
Yes.
So, don't know. He didn't show.
No, so she was surprised and probably a little suspicious, but still relieved, thinking, well, maybe he's given up.
Yeah, I'm sure she's probably thinking, well, she's happy with the outcome. What's he going to do next?
Exactly. She'd been with him long enough to know it wasn't going to be that simple, I imagine.
I would think, yeah, because it hadn't been.
No.
It'd been a long, drawn-out process.
Yes, it had.
Just Michelle's attorney mentioned that it would be rare to have two or three filings after a divorce. He was in the 20s
yes,
for his filings. So,
right.
And he was a frequent flyer.
Extraordinary. Like I said, people in the courthouse were talking about it.
Yeah.
So after that weekend, on August 28th, 2017, a Monday, a family friend came by Michelle's house to pick up her 14-year-old daughter to take her to swimming practice. And this gentleman looked through the small front door windows and immediately knew that something was terribly wrong. He called 911, and he told the dispatcher that he'd seen a shadowy female figure on the stairway, but she wasn't moving at all. There was something very upsetting about this. Didn't seem right. So Corning Police Sergeant John McDivitt was the first responder to Michelle's house that afternoon. He approached the front door and looked inside. He could see a female at the bottom of the stairs. The front door was unlocked. When McDivitt opened it, the family dog ran out. McDivitt approached 46-year-old Michelle, who had a rope around her neck. She was very cold to the touch and pulseless. It appeared that she had died from suicide by hanging. So more officers arrived and the house was searched. No one else was home and no suicide note was found. So the first concern after identifying Michelle was to find out the whereabouts of her 14-year-old daughter, who should have been home and awaiting her ride to swimming class. So they're very worried about her.
Yeah, well, it turned out that the youngest daughter was with her 19-year-old sister, Carrie, in Rochester. It was about 100 miles away. Now, police learned this information from Carrie, who called them after a friend called her to tell her the news of her mother's suicide. So that's how Carrie found out. A friend of hers called up and said, your mom died.
Yes.
Carrie told the police that she had stopped by the house the night before, planning to spend the night there. But she and her mother had fought, and she told them that she didn't want to stay there. So she left the house, and she took her sister with her because she was so upset with her mother's behavior, she was worried about her little sister's safety.
Which is questionable.
Yeah, but that's what the story was. So we want to listen to the little clip of Carrie's call to the police?
Yes, let's listen to this short clip. It's only about 20 seconds of Carrie's call to police. And listen carefully, because it's really quite amazing.
This is Lieutenant Heverly. Can I help you?
Hi. My name is Carrie. My friends called me earlier today and told me about my mom. And that she... I'm sorry.
That's okay.
And I just and call it something to my mom for myself.
Yeah, we are looking into it. And still with you now?
Yeah, she's in my apartment.
Okay, so super short, but what did you notice about that, Dickie?
Well, she sounded upset and crying to begin with, and then she got very matter-of-fact, casual almost, about her sister.
Oh, absolutely. In the beginning, she's acting like she can barely speak. She's so tearful, which honestly sounded a little bit fake. But when they ask about her sister, her answer is just so deadpan casual.
Oh, she's right here.
Yeah. Like, she's forgotten about her mother's death in that 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So, huge red flag.
It is. The sister's with her because, according to Carrie, she was afraid that her mother might harm her.
Right.
And then she just gets all casual about her.
Well, and of course, the bigger thing is she's just found out her mother is dead.
Yeah, well, the tearfulness only has a short shelf life.
Okay, well, it definitely is just a big red flag to me that something's amiss here.
Well, and I'm sure it was a big red flag to investigators.
Well, yeah, I think so. But, you know, loud disputes had become pretty common in the home. Carrie and her mother argued often, and these arguments ended in screaming matches. Over the past 2 to 3 years, there had been about 1 dozen 911 calls coming from that house. Considering all of the disharmony in the family since Michelle and Lloyd's divorce, it may have been understandable that Michelle would have been really depressed and suicidal. But Michelle's friends and family definitely disagreed with that. Michelle was known to just be a really positive person, determined to live a happy life. She certainly had not given up on her children, so why would she give up on herself? And on the day of her death, she'd been happy about that court victory. So why would she have been upset or suicidal that day?
Yeah, I mean, she won the case.
Yes, right.
So, celebrate.
So investigators called Lloyd, who said he was rushing to upstate New York to be with his daughters. He told the detective on the phone that he wasn't totally surprised to hear the news of Michelle's suicide, and he was the only person they would speak to who wasn't totally surprised. He said that despite her happy-go-lucky exterior, Michelle had spoken of suicide before, kind of painted a picture of her as a disturbed person. He even went so far to say that before they were married, Michelle had made suicidal plans with some high school friends, and he'd been worried about that. Now, that was like 20 years earlier.
Yeah, please.
Yeah.
I mean, that's high school stuff. I mean, not to belittle thoughts of suicide, but no, that's not something I'd be too concerned about.
Well, it's a long time ago, and he's the only person that's bringing this up as something that would not be surprising.
That's right.
Yeah.
So Michelle's body was taken to the medical examiner for autopsy, and the police were processing the scene of her death. In the meantime, Michelle's sister in California was notified of her death, and she was shocked and devastated, but thought that maybe Michelle had had a bad moment where she could no longer cope. She knew that Michelle had been fighting with her daughters and dealing with an abusive ex.
Yeah, so her sister lived pretty far away in California, but they still spoke fairly often, so she was aware that Michelle had been going through a lot. The sister then had the horrible job of giving the news to their mother. She, of course, was devastated, but she didn't believe that Michelle had killed herself, not for 1 minute. When Michelle's friends heard the news, they remembered months earlier when Michelle had asked them to promise they would look out for her daughters if anything ever happened to her. They'd assured her that she would live a long, happy life, but looking back, they had to wonder, had Michelle known something that they didn't know? Had Michelle been planning to kill herself? Or had Michelle been afraid that Lloyd might do something to her? I would go with the latter. Of course, that's easy to do in hindsight, but I would.
Well, once it becomes more known about the domestic difficulties they had, maybe they'd look more at him.
Yes, certainly.
But, I mean, sure, the initial scene, she hung herself.
So as they grieved, Michelle's friends were confused. Her behavior leading up to her death didn't seem at all suicidal. She was always forward-looking and making the best of things. Now, when looking into methods of suicide in women, only about 9% kill themselves by hanging. Also, her friends didn't believe that Michelle would do that in a way that would leave her daughters to find her. Now, her daughters were kind of brats. They gave her a hard time, a lot of that because of what their father had been telling them. But Michelle was not giving up on them at all, and she, of course, loved them dearly. So she wouldn't want them to find her body there, hanging from a rope. Certainly not.
Wouldn't think.
Now, very odd thing for a mother or a woman to do. But statistics aside, friends and family were surprised that there was no suicide note. Remember, Michelle had a master's degree in literature, and she was an excellent writer. So her friends believed that she would have written out an explanation and at least expressed her love to her daughters in a note. Despite all of the arguments and conflicts, Michelle was still all in as a mom.
So police were waiting for the autopsy results when they spoke with Lloyd. They had noticed a ligature mark on Michelle's chin, as if someone had gone behind her, thrown the rope over her head, and pulled back and down, causing the rope burn on her face before the rope was moved to her neck. And this, when you say face, I mean this is around the mouth and chin, where you can see the rope burn.
Yeah, right under her lower lip.
So this is more of a sign of foul play than death by suicide.
Well, yeah, how could she do that to herself?
Right.
She really couldn't.
And then when they interviewed the youngest Knight Rider daughter, she told them that she'd heard her mother screaming the night she died. Then there were other pieces of evidence at the scene that pointed away from a suicide. The position of the thin nylon rope on Michelle's body had gone around her chin, and she also had scratch marks on her face and neck, like she'd been trying to pull the rope off her neck. And also, in Michelle's bedroom, her mattress had been pushed out of place from the bed frame, and there were also some small smudges of blood on the bedroom wall. So it appeared like there had been a struggle. Well, I certainly would think so.
Well, it was subtle. It wasn't like a super obvious thing.
Yeah, but still.
But yeah, it was definitely.
Blood on the wall?
Yes. Once they saw that, they were certainly concerned about this as being a staged act. Michelle's friends also approached the police after Michelle's death and told them that Michelle was not emotionally out of control. And that's how Lloyd had been trying to portray her. They said that she was just dealing with an ex-husband who demeaned her and criticized her all of the time. In addition to the Corning Police Department and Steuben County District Attorney's Office, this investigation was carried out with the New York State Police, the FBI, New Jersey State Police, and the North Brunswick and Princeton, New Jersey Police Departments. So we've got some people with experience and skill involved in this investigation.
Boy, I guess you got a whole bunch of departments.
Yes.
So when the medical examiner's report came in, the cause of death was undetermined, and the manner of death was asphyxia. Now, Michelle's mother believed that Lloyd was behind her daughter's death. However, Lloyd had a pretty good alibi. When Michelle's body was found, he was at a job interview 2,500 miles away in California.
So Carrie told investigators that her father had helped her move into an apartment in Rochester on Saturday, but that he hadn't been in Corning that day. So even though he wasn't in Corning, police now knew that he had been in Rochester, just 100 miles from Michelle's house, not very far. Carrie said that after Lloyd helped her move into her apartment, he spent Saturday night at the Micro Hotel in Rochester and flew out to California on Sunday. He was still in California when he was notified of Michelle's death, and he flew back east and showed up at the Steuben County Family Court on Wednesday, pretty much immediately when he got back, just 2 days after Michelle's body had been found. So the family court was basically his first stop. And he did that to stop his child support payments to Michelle.
Well, of course, that's what you do first.
So police met him outside the courthouse for a preliminary interview, and Lloyd told the police that he checked into the hotel in Rochester on Saturday, and they checked. CCTV footage shows him checking in at the front desk on Saturday.
Yeah, so Carrie visited Lloyd at his hotel, and video from that night shows Lloyd and Carrie walking out to her car. Lloyd told the police that he walked Carrie to her car and then went back to his hotel room. He said he had invited Carrie to return the next morning for breakfast. Nothing like a microtel breakfast, you know?
That's for sure. You gotta enjoy the free hotel breakfast.
You bet. So CCTV footage shows Carrie arriving at the hotel at 7 a.m. with her 14-year-old sister. And a check of Lloyd's phone showed that it was at the hotel all night.
Yes, that's true.
But there's a but here.
Yes, a big one.
A big but.
So the hotel video told a very different story from Carrie's and Lloyd's. When Lloyd walked Carrie to her car Saturday night, he could be seen getting into the car with her. Then Carrie drove off with Lloyd in her car. The video did not show Lloyd returning to the hotel that night at all. Lloyd's phone was in the hotel all night, but he just left it there. He wasn't there. So now we've got huge red flags waving because why would you lie to the police if you were innocent? That's always a big question.
It's a huge question.
And usually the answer is that you really aren't innocent.
So the hotel video from the next morning shows Lloyd walking across the parking lot to his car at 6:30 in the morning, still wearing the same clothes from the previous night. So police now knew that Lloyd was lying to them. Now, looking into a motive, they found out that Lloyd was in bad shape financially. Maybe more than bad shape, maybe really abysmal shape. He owed over $100,000 alone in credit card debt, and he was paying his ex-wife $5,000 a month. It's not a good formula.
Well, you know, it isn't, but any kind of financial problem can be overcome, and murder you can never take back.
Yeah, well, you know that's true. I know that's true.
So what gets into these people's minds?
We keep hearing about people that make that decision.
Yes. And he's already divorced from her.
Yeah.
He's free to go do whatever. But instead, this is what he decided to do. So Lloyd had also tried to collect on Michelle's $260,000 life insurance policy. They suspected that Lloyd had killed Michelle and that Carrie was covering for her father. So they decided to wiretap Lloyd and Carrie's phones. And they started this just about 2 months after Michelle's death, because they had to get the warrant and all that. So they're listening to their phone calls at that point. This was mid-November, and some time had passed, so Lloyd and Carrie really weren't talking about the crime or Michelle in their conversations. So police decided to do what they call tickle the wire. And that's an expression for when an investigator contacts a suspect to get them worrying about their crime, so they'll call their co-conspirator and maybe give something away.
Right. So an officer called up Carrie and asked her to come into the station for some additional questioning. So she agreed to meet with them the following week. But as soon as she got off the phone with the law enforcement people, she called up her dad. She was really freaked out. She asked Lloyd what she should do. And he told her, oh, it's probably just standard stuff. Don't worry about it. But then, maybe after thinking about it, he said he didn't want her to talk to the police. He said, make an excuse. Cancel. He told her to tell him that she had a counseling appointment in New Jersey because the death of her mother had been really hard on her, so she couldn't make a session with the police.
Well, then the conversation got really disturbing. Lloyd laughingly asked Carrie if she thought she could cry for the police. Carrie giggled and said she might. Then Lloyd said to her that it would be nice if this was just all over. And Carrie said that would be a dream. So we don't hear anything here about remorse, sorrow, nothing. No grieving,
no.
Just that they want it to be over with. She went on and said that if they were after her, they wouldn't have called her and asked her to come in, right? And Lloyd laughed and said, yes, if it was serious, they would have a warrant and they'd just pick you up. So it can't be too bad, he told her. So the police's suspicions grew, of course. Why would Carrie want to lie to them if she was innocent? But the autopsy report from the pathologist who had written undetermined as the cause of death was holding up a homicide investigation. So the DA asked a private forensic pathologist to take a look at the reports. There was no body for him to examine because Lloyd had had Michelle cremated. But the pathologist saw pictures of the rope mark on Michelle's chin and petechial hemorrhages in her eyes. How about a little explanation of what that means?
Well, we've talked about the rope mark. The petechial hemorrhages are little burst blood vessels that you can see. Now, with strangulation, this is going to be mostly in the head and face. So you can see these little red pinpoints on the white part of the eye, on the eyelids, sometimes around the mouth, but they're noticeable. And they indicate that there was strangulation involved.
Yes, but if she'd hung herself, she still could have those, couldn't she?
She could still have those. The rope mark on the chin is a tough one to...
Oh, no, I'm with you on that. I'm just thinking maybe those hemorrhages would still happen in a hanging.
Yeah, no, I don't think that the petechial hemorrhages help differentiate between her being manually strangled or hung by a rope.
So you don't? Okay. Well, I thought maybe they'd be more severe if it was traumatic like that. I wasn't sure. So then he told investigators that Michelle's death was definitely a homicide. She had been strangled to death.
And now Michelle's mom, Jeannie, she never really liked Lloyd. And the entire family actually thought that he was this arrogant SOB, almost from the time they first met him. Now, once he and Michelle had their kids, Lloyd raised them like they were in the military. If he was angry with them, or if they did something he didn't like, he would order them to stand against the wall, or drop to their knees with their faces up against the wall.
And this had been done in front of other people, so it's not something he was really hiding.
No.
So that's very bizarre.
He'll say, I never hit them. I just made them stand against the wall.
Right. But we do know that he did hit them, too. Now, after Michelle's death, Jeannie flew out to New York to be with her granddaughters. But it's really sad because Michelle hadn't spoken to her in like 10 years. So she didn't really have a great relationship with the granddaughters. She still cared about them, but they hadn't had a lot of contact. But that's when she learned about how bad things had really been for Michelle. So interestingly, Michelle had left behind a journal and boxes of documents and court papers about the custody battle with Lloyd. Michelle had also saved screenshots of texts between her and Lloyd. So she'd done everything right. She'd documented everything, and she'd been constantly emotionally abused by Lloyd. That was clear from this evidence. Also, Lloyd had turned her daughters against her. So, if her death was a murder, Lloyd was really the only suspect they would look at least first, because they really have no idea that it could be a stranger or that someone broke into the house. They were quite sure it was someone who knew her, and who really had the motive other than Lloyd.
Exactly.
So, on January 24th, 2018, this is 5 months after Michelle's death, two investigators showed up at Lloyd's office in New Jersey, and at the same time, state police troopers found Carrie at her college internship, which was in Syracuse, New York.
Yeah, so the investigators told Lloyd that Michelle's death was clearly a homicide. Lloyd denied any involvement and seemed pretty confident. He agreed to take a polygraph, so police gave him directions to a station in New Jersey where a polygraph operator was on call. So they say goodbye to Lloyd, and he's going to go down to Jersey and have his polygraph done. But Lloyd never showed.
Which certainly looks like consciousness of guilt.
That's for sure.
I have no problem with someone saying they don't want to take a polygraph, because I don't think they're always that accurate anyway. But when someone says they will take it and then they don't show up, that always makes you wonder what's going on here.
Absolutely.
In Carrie's interview with police, she caved quite easily. In a recorded police interview, Carrie admitted that her father went to her mother's house with her that night and that she helped him get in without Michelle's knowledge. She had disarmed Michelle's security system for Lloyd. She said that Michelle was at the top of the stairs when she saw Lloyd enter her house, and Michelle must have been terrified. Then they started arguing, Carrie said, and Lloyd went upstairs. Then she heard them arguing in her mother's bedroom, and then it suddenly got quiet. Now, at first, Carrie said that she didn't know what was happening, but then she admitted that she had seen her mother's dead body. Investigators transferred Carrie to a police station where they continued to interview her, and they video recorded it. So Carrie admitted to police that her father had come to her 1 week before the murder. And he told her that he couldn't afford to pay her mother the money he owed to her, and he really had no way out. So then he gave her an ultimatum. He was going to kill himself unless she killed her mother. And his plan for the murder was to make it look like a suicide.
So Carrie said that Lloyd laid out the plan for her. He was going to put a towel in her mouth so Michelle would be quiet. Then he would put a rope around her neck to strangle her. And then he would throw her over the banister. So Carrie said that she had stayed downstairs, watching her younger sister, who was sleeping on the living room sofa. And her father went upstairs and into Michelle's room. Michelle's yelling, "Why are you here? What are you doing?" Then Michelle began screaming, "Why? Why?" And all this noise woke up Carrie's little sister.
Well, Michelle had to know nothing good was going to come of this. And it just breaks my heart that she knew her daughter was downstairs and was doing nothing. That's really heartbreaking.
Isn't it?
It's bad enough if your ex-husband murders you. But to think that your daughter assisted him in any way, just too much to even imagine. So after Carrie's little sister was awake, Carrie took her out of the house and she put her in her car. When Lloyd was finished killing Michelle, he sneaked out the back of the house, walked around the side, and then climbed into the open hatch of Carrie's car. And according to Carrie, her 14-year-old sister didn't know that he was there. So is Lloyd or Carrie thinking about the 14-year-old and what this is going to do to her? No.
Nah.
So Carrie closed the hatch and drove back to Rochester. She's got her little sister with her, and her dad's hiding in the hatch.
And the police were ready now to arrest Lloyd for Michelle's murder.
Well, yeah, they pretty much have a confession.
Yeah.
And a witness.
Yeah, but they didn't know where Lloyd was. As we said, he didn't show up for his polygraph. And he wasn't answering his phone. But the police were able to trace his phone to downtown Princeton. GPS showed that he was at a downtown parking garage. So they went to that location, and they found Lloyd on the roof of the garage. And when the officers tried to approach him to arrest him, he jumped up on the railing and threatened to jump off the 5-story garage. Now, he kept the police at bay for about 2 hours. Then a state trooper was able to sprint and tackle Lloyd to the floor.
Yeah, so this is interesting. It's actually on video if you watch the Dateline episode on it. And this is a football player or former football player who's a state trooper. And he just, you know, it's like a football game. He just sacks him right onto the cement.
Oh, it's a beautiful tackle.
It really is. So Lloyd was arrested, of course, and charged with the first-degree murder of his ex-wife, Michelle. Carrie, who police believed had been manipulated by Lloyd, was charged with second-degree murder for helping him. Then the DA decided that they would need to convince Carrie to testify against Lloyd in order to guarantee a conviction. So she was facing 15 years to life if she cooperated. If she didn't cooperate, she would face 25 years to life. So Carrie sat in jail for 2 weeks before she agreed to testify against her father and plead guilty. But in an interview with investigators, she revealed a new detail now. She admitted for the first time that she had been more involved than she had said earlier. Carrie said that she went upstairs after her father had killed her mother. He opened the bedroom door and Carrie entered. And she saw Michelle's body laying on the floor. And Lloyd told Carrie he needed help lifting and moving her mother's body. So this makes it even worse.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I mean, if you have a dead body, it's not that easy. Hoist him up and throw him over a railing to simulate hanging.
No.
So yeah, he needs help. Good thing you're here, Carrie.
It's just awful. Awful, awful, awful.
Terrible.
So Carrie said that she and her father dragged her mother's body around the corner, and he tied the rope around one of the railings. Then Carrie watched as Lloyd lifted Michelle's body and threw her over the side of the railing. It was really shocking to hear how Carrie had done this to her own mother. Really hard to believe that she could be manipulated into doing such a horrible thing. You know, Carrie was 19. She was a smart young woman who could have said no. But the DA was kind of sympathetic. He believed that Carrie had been manipulated and brainwashed by Lloyd. So he wasn't really blaming her completely.
Yeah. Parental alienation, which was something Michelle herself had been concerned about, was seen as the method used by Lloyd to turn his daughter against her mother. So what is this? What is parental alienation? It's certainly more than just one parent convincing their child to dislike the other parent.
Yeah, according to LegalDictionary.net, the term parental alienation refers to the psychological manipulation of a child by saying and doing things that lead the child to look unfavorably on one parent. Parental alienation is recognized as a form of brainwashing, and it can be done both consciously and unconsciously. So a parent might not even know that they're doing it. But I really don't think this applies to Lloyd. I think he knew damn well what he was doing.
No, he was intentionally doing this.
Yes.
With one goal in mind.
Yep. So this is a real problem in family law cases, and it's something that the courts take very seriously. Considering Lloyd Nyreiter's relationship with his ex-wife and daughters, and the ongoing legal battles, their situation was just ideally set up for parental alienation to occur. Simply put, parental alienation is the manipulation of a child to the point where they reject one of their parents. So by family law standards, children need to have a good relationship with both parents, and each parent should have enough quality time with the child. Unfortunately, in cases of divorce, many parents let their anger spill into the lives of their children. When a parent does things to isolate their child and make the child angry with or afraid of the other parent, then it's called alienation. So what are some techniques used by parents to alienate their children against the other parent? Let's go over a few of those. There are a lot of them.
There's a lot. There certainly is. I mean, the typical thing, bad mouthing, is always at the top. So criticizing or belittling the other parent, or telling the child that the other parent is dangerous, crazy, or unworthy of being loved by the child.
Yeah, well, he definitely did that.
Yeah, and then he can interfere with the visitation. So you could deliver the child to the other parent late, or pick that child up early, or make excuses to keep the child during the other parent's scheduled time, or refusing to allow the child to contact the other parent, or excessively calling that child while he or she is with the other parent. So there's a lot of ways to get that done.
Right. So this causes the child to reject the other parent, and that includes making the child feel guilty for loving the other parent, creating conflicts between the child and the other parent, and forcing the child to choose between parents, which is what Lloyd did with his murder plan. Also, he talked to the children about issues that were inappropriate for them to hear about, so getting the kids involved in the parental disputes is really a big no-no.
Yeah, and then you can undermine the child's relationship with the other parent. So drilling the child for details of his or her visit with the other parent, or asking the child to spy on the other parent, and encouraging that child to call the parent by his or her first name instead of mom or dad.
And I think one of the biggest ones is how he undermined Michelle's role in their children's lives. This included refusing to provide any information about things like their schooling, their medical care, refusing to notify the school and the sports teams and the doctors about appointments, and even withholding the other parent's contact information and refusing to invite the other parent to some activities, which he had definitely done with some of Carrie's college activities. And these children who are victims of parental alienation can show some real serious signs of emotional and psychological damage. And this, of course, includes anger.
Yeah, that would be the biggest.
Yeah, well, they're being exposed to these criticisms and accusations of one parent against the other, and that's stressful. And when this happens at a young age, they can develop really poor skills for dealing with conflict and their own emotional pain. They can also become quicker to become angry.
Right.
It can also hurt their self-esteem or self-confidence, because if they think one of their parents is just terrible or insignificant, they believe that half of themselves is unworthy. Also, another thing that is seen with this is a lack of impulse control. The alienated children may lack the personal control to evaluate situations before choosing an action. And this was seen as maybe what was going on with Carrie. Maybe she wasn't making good decisions.
And then there's separation anxiety. Children who are kind of programmed by one parent to hate, fear, or distrust the other often show anxiety about leaving or being separated from the programming parent. And we can get even into some deeper things. Depression and suicide. Parental alienation increases the pain of divorce for the child, which can lead to depression and even to suicide. And abusive chemicals, more susceptible to abusing drugs and alcohol, and that can lead to other illegal actions.
Certainly. Well, once a child chooses a side, which clearly happened with Carrie at least, we know that, the child can become obsessed with the targeted parent's faults and with hating that parent. So the targeted parent, who would be Michelle in this case, is often stunned by the about-face taken by his or her child, and it can be pretty much impossible to parent a child who thinks so poorly of you and treats you so badly. There's no respect.
Now here's an example of how Lloyd turned Carrie against Michelle. This is an incident 2 years before the murder. Michelle was pulling out of her driveway. After an argument, Carrie was trying to stop her. Now Michelle inched her way out of the driveway, never coming close to Carrie, but Lloyd was able to convince Carrie that her mother had tried to run her over with the car. And Carrie had even called the police and accused her mother of trying to kill her. That charge was dropped. But in convincing Carrie that her mother tried to kill her, it made it more reasonable for Carrie to help Lloyd in the plot to kill her mother.
Yes. And really, Carrie, well, all of the kids should have been in therapy.
Oh, definitely.
In court documents before Michelle's death, Michelle did accuse Lloyd of turning Carrie against her. So she knew what was going on, and the DA believed that this is exactly what had happened. Since the prosecuting team decided that Carrie had been brainwashed by her father, she was charged with second-degree murder for her part in Michelle's murder, instead of first-degree murder. So she's really catching quite a break there.
Certainly is.
The leniency with her, I'm not so sure I'm on board with it, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, we'll hit that up.
So the case against Lloyd was circumstantial. However, when Michelle's clothing was sent to the forensics lab for testing, Lloyd's touch DNA was found on it. When confronted about this additional evidence, Lloyd decided to accept a plea deal that was offered to him. And this was no great plea deal.
No, it wasn't.
So he told the court he'd planned the murder and that he had manipulated Carrie into helping him. And the plea deal was 25 years to life in prison. The death penalty wasn't an option. While laws imposing capital punishment in the state of New York do still exist, it isn't enforced. It's been declared unconstitutional in the state. So the last execution took place in 1963 when a man named Eddie Lee Mays was electrocuted at Sing Sing Prison. Mays had been convicted of armed robbery and murder, and he had died in the electric chair, which is just brutal. But that wasn't something that Lloyd had to worry about, so it's kind of surprising that he took that plea deal, which wasn't much of a deal.
Oh, I guess he figured that he was going to be convicted anyway, so it's better to grab the plea deal. I mean, they could have sentenced him to much worse. He could have gotten life without parole or something like that.
Well, sure.
This way.
I don't know if he'll ever get out on parole, though.
Well, he probably won't, but at least he's got a fighting chance after 25 years.
Sure. I suppose so. Yeah.
So the Steuben County District Attorney supported the decision that allowed Carrie to plead guilty to second-degree manslaughter instead of second-degree murder. And this happened in 2018.
So yeah, there was some fear that maybe Lloyd would try and blame everything on Carrie.
Sure.
But I guess he did have some feelings for her or some little remaining nugget of a conscience. Because he didn't do that, he did take responsibility. So the DA had said that although Carrie had made a bad choice, he believed that she was brainwashed by her father. So he believed that her behavior was a result of parental alienation syndrome after years of Lloyd denigrating Michelle.
So Carrie was sentenced to 1 to 3 years in prison. Michelle's mother, Jeannie, doesn't blame her granddaughter and has said that Lloyd manipulated Carrie. She wrote in a letter to the judge, back when Carrie was being sentenced, "I do not believe my daughter Michelle would want a long prison sentence for her daughter. She would want her to eventually lead a happy life."
Well, good luck with that. I just can't imagine the amount of therapy you'd have to go through to be able to come to peace with this.
I'm just thinking the same thing. You know, yes, I want her to lead a happy life when she figures out how to deal with the fact that she helped her father kill her mother.
How do you deal with that, though? I can't imagine ever being able to get over that guilt.
I don't either.
So Carrie at first had pleaded guilty to second-degree murder, but in light of that confession by Lloyd, who admitted that he had psychologically manipulated her for years, the court agreed to reduce the charge to manslaughter, and she waived her right to an appeal as part of that agreement. So Carrie just got off with close to nothing. She was released from the Albion Correctional Facility on January 16th of 2020.
Yeah, so she didn't serve 3 years.
No.
What, one and a half, something like that.
Yeah, less than two. And I think there was time served as she waited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what do you think about that? I think she probably should have gotten like at least 10 years. She needed something significant to be able to realize the severity of it, to get the therapy that she needs. That's just not long enough, in my opinion, at all.
Yeah, I don't think it's, don't want to say not enough of a sentence, but I don't think that's commensurate with what she actually did.
No, I don't either. It's just really a heartbreaking case for everyone involved.
It is.
Except Lloyd. I don't give a shit about him. But you just have to wonder about Carrie. Is she a decent person? Was it just manipulation? Or is she just as bad as her father? Who knows?
We don't know.
We don't know.
I hope in 5 years we don't cover a murder of a wife or a husband.
A husband, yeah.
By his wife, Carrie.
Well, let's hope not. I think that her grandmother did forgive her. I'm not sure about her sisters, but I did read at one point that the youngest child was in foster care. So that's pretty sad. That 14-year-old.
Well, she's a minor. The other, Carrie and her sister, are adults.
Right.
So.
But I just can't imagine. She's lost her mother and her father, and she's put in foster care.
Yeah, she's not with a grandparent or something?
No. Well, she might be at this point, but she wasn't. She was in foster care. And she has to get over the fact that her father and her sister murdered her mother while she was there. This is just heavy stuff. I don't know how you get past. I don't know if it's possible to really get past these things. So, I have a few housekeeping type reminders for our listeners. If you have a case suggestion that you'd like to share with us, or if you have interesting comments or opinions on a case we've already covered, we encourage you to send us an email to truecrimebrewery@tigrabber.com. Or if you're just a brave, kick-ass type of soul who wants your voice to be heard, we have the option for you to leave us a voicemail, and it can be up to 3 minutes long. And if you can't get your point across in that period of time, you're welcome to call back and leave us a part two. It's been done before. So how do I leave a voicemail, you may ask? It's super easy. Just go to our website, tigrabber.com, and click on Send a Voicemail. Or you can click on the link in our show notes where it reads, Record a Voicemail for a Future Show. We do love to listen to our voicemails. Now, if you did send us a voicemail with some positive feedback, I just want to let you know that we do listen to those and we appreciate the love. We just don't play those because I don't feel like other listeners want their time taken up with Dick and I just soaking up the praise and the glory. So thank you to all who have sent us feedback in whatever form. We certainly do appreciate it.
So if you would like to get all of your future TCB episodes commercial free, get access to an extra members only episode each month, and get a free beer glass, bottle opener, or a set of coasters, along with some surprise TCB swag, you might want to consider subscribing as a TIEGRABBER at TIEGRABBER.com. There is a long list of episodes from our premium feed available to both new and long-term subscribers. So it might be handy to keep your ears and mind busy with something other than shopping and traveling over the holidays.
Well, yeah, I was thinking like if the in-laws are chatting about things you don't like, just put your earbuds in and smile as you listen to a little True Crime Brewery.
Oh, but I wouldn't do that.
I know you wouldn't, but there are people.
But you might. No.
So if you're interested, just click on subscribe at tigrabber.com or click on the link in our show notes.
That's how you do it.
We also have all kinds of merch for sale at tigrabber.com/shop if you want to treat yourself or buy a gift for a fellow true crime buff. I've noticed that a lot of you have bought hoodies and coffee mugs. I guess that's good wintertime stuff over the past couple of weeks. And I really appreciate it because any support that you give really helps us out. So enough of my selling. Let's go to you, Dick, and talk feedback.
We're in the feedback realm. So I have a couple voicemails and one email for this week. And the first voicemail is from Zia, who has a case suggestion for us.
Hi, Dick and Jill. My name is Zia, and I live in South Africa. I live in a town called Brakpan, and that's in Gauteng. And I'd just like to say that I really enjoy your podcast. I came across it when I was searching for another case. I've been listening to you guys for about a year now, and I really enjoy it. I listen to you guys when I'm cleaning or washing or just to get the time passed. And I'd love to suggest a case from South Africa. I know you've done a few. I don't know if you've heard of this one. It's the kidnap and murder of Jade Panayiotou. And this happened in Cape Town, South Africa. She was reported missing on 21 April 2015. And she was only 28 years old. And she was a teacher. And she disappeared outside a complex in the morning, waiting for a friend to pick her up. And the police launched a massive search, which included flying squad and canine unit. And her family offered a 50,000 rand reward for any information that would lead to a safe return. And many people took to social media to help to find her. And this case really turned into a big thing, because in South Africa there's a lot of hijacking and murder, but it turned out that it was her husband that had her killed. And this case was very high profile, and I'm sure if you look into it, it'll be something that you'd like to do. You guys keep up the good work, and I look forward to listening to you guys. Okay, bye.
Thank you so much, Zia. What a beautiful accent. So what do we know about this case, Dickie?
Well, Zia's given us the important parts. Her husband, Christopher, was the mastermind of the plot to kill her. So the police very quickly arrested the two men responsible for the killing. And this was followed pretty quickly by her husband, Christopher's arrest.
So do we know if these were friends or someone that he had hired?
He had hired them.
Because it seems like he was trying to make it look like a random crime, which, like Zia said, does happen fairly often in that region.
Right.
Yeah.
Some motives that were suggested are: husband Christopher had been having a long-term affair with, I think, a co-worker. The other thing that might have pressured him was that he was getting more and more in debt because he had a wife and a mistress.
That's expensive.
Well, at least the mistress is.
Yeah, right. Well, these are just motives as old as time.
Yeah.
Right?
You got it.
Money and sex, basically.
Yeah.
Well, I'll never get over the people who decide that they're going to murder instead of go for a divorce. What are they thinking? Well, I don't know. They must be without a conscience, without common sense. Because even if you have no feelings about it, you have no morals, you should know that you're probably going to get caught and you're going to have a lot worse trouble than being in debt or having a girlfriend to worry about.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I can see where you think, all right, this will solve my problems and I won't get caught because I'm really smart. But you said, who's going to be the suspect, number one?
Of course.
The spouse or the significant other.
And if you think they're not going to look into your financials and who you've been spending time with, you're dead wrong.
Absolutely. So
it's just a complete shame. There's no reason for this woman to have died in her late 20s. It's just stupid.
So we just need to get the word out that the way to separate from your spouse is divorce, not murder.
Absolutely. Just be honest. Just explain, I'm not in love anymore. You know, whatever. Don't kill people, please. We have enough cases to cover. We don't need more.
Yeah, I think it's going to fall on deaf ears, but anyway.
Well, the people that are doing it are the stupid people, right? Okay, so we have another voicemail. Who's this one from?
This is from Jamie M., and she left us two messages, so this is the oldest one.
Are we playing both, or
no,
they're different?
No, we're playing one, because I'm saving the other one for another week.
Oh, Jamie, you're like a guest star. Okay.
Hi, Jill and Dick. This is Jamie. I'm in North Carolina. I'm calling today with a couple of case suggestions, and I think I'll try to leave a couple separate messages so you'll have one for the future if you choose to play these at all. So I know that you've said that you'd like cases that are something other than the typical white women, And Jill, I believe you've also said in the past that you like cases where there's something that can be good that can come out of it, such as a change in legislation. So I think a good option for you is a pretty recent one from Virginia. It's Ashanti Billy. She went missing from Little Creek Base, which is in Virginia Beach, right on the border of Norfolk. She was 19 years old, and she worked in a sandwich shop on base, and she went missing for 11 days, and her body was found in North Carolina. The man who, there's no doubt he did it. He stalked her, and there's a lot to the story, but he was diagnosed with schizophrenia, so her family won't be able to see justice in court with him, unfortunately. And, of course, that makes things complicated, too. There's all the issues with did he know what he was doing and all that if he's schizophrenic, and maybe Dick can weigh in more on that. So unfortunately, since she was an adult, she did not qualify to have an Amber Alert, and since she was not a senior citizen, she couldn't have a Silver Alert. So during that time missing, there was nothing that could be done as far as a national alert other than trying to get things out there in the news. Since then, they've created, I think it's called Ashanti's Law. So it's going to be supposed to be a nationwide law that's supposed to set up alerts for missing adults who are believed to be in critical danger. It was signed into law in early 2019, and the state of Virginia was able to, I guess, get their part of it implemented, but they're still pushing the Department of Justice to get this implemented nationwide like it's supposed to be. I thought it'd be an interesting case. I don't know a whole lot. I'm not a big beer person. But Norfolk, Virginia has O'Connor Brewery, which is very popular, and their IPA, which is the most popular, and my friends who like IPAs love it, is called El Guapo, but they have a pretty big selection, and sometimes they have sours, so maybe you can find something there. Anyway, thanks for everything.
Well, thank you, Jamie. So this does sound like a really good case to cover. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just the fact that they were able to get this Ashanti's Law. Right now, it's only in Virginia, maybe more coming up, but it's going to cover the gap between an Amber Alert and a Silver Alert, which is certainly a lot of years.
Well, it's a big gap, isn't it?
It is.
It certainly is. It's funny because I was just reading about how the Amber Alert started, and the girl that was behind that, I think it was Amber Hagerman. So I was just looking at that as something to cover in 2022. And this is another one to add to that. Might be a good idea to do these around the same time, or maybe do one as a regular episode and one as a premium episode, something like that.
Right. Good idea.
But really good suggestion. Thank you, Jamie. And from what I heard from Dick, I think he is interested in playing your voicemail, your second voicemail too. So way to go.
Yeah, now don't get too cocky about it, okay, Jamie? But we're looking at the other voicemail.
So yes.
Stay tuned.
Well, she's well-spoken, good quality voicemail.
See? Yeah. From your standpoint,
yeah.
You want someone who is clear and concise and speaks well.
Yeah, and both Zia and Jamie met that criteria.
That's why I'm sure that the other voicemail that Jamie left will fulfill your criteria also.
Well, with Ashanti, I believe Jamie said that she was being stalked, right?
I don't recall.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just thinking that's something I'm really interested in digging more into in 2022 are the stalking murders where women are stalked and they try and do everything they can. There have been a few cases recently where the girls have done everything they possibly could, done it correctly. And it usually is women or girls. Sometimes it is men, I realize that. But they've done everything they should or they could do, and they still end up getting killed by this person who's stalking them. And that seems like another hole in law enforcement that we need to work on.
Well, yeah, but I tell you, it's an impossibility to guarantee or to be 100% effective in preventing any horrible things happening like that.
Well, 100%, yeah. Sure, but could we maybe get to 50%? There must be some things we could do.
I'd love to hear your ideas.
Well,
from my looking or thinking about things, the presence of a restraining order isn't worth crap.
Well, yes, and why is that? Is it because they're not being handled correctly? I think in many cases that's it.
No, they're being handled correctly. I mean, if I'm the murderer intent on murdering a person, I'm going to kill that person, restraining order or not. There's no way you're going to stop it.
Well, unless you stop it earlier. when they're stalking and when they break the restraining order, maybe they should be, you know, put into prison for a while. Maybe
if,
they
if
should.
You can do that.
Yeah, because there doesn't seem to be much for consequences prior to the murder.
No, there aren't.
I mean, I do see what you're saying. It is a really difficult type of situation, but some of these stories I've read about recently, definitely there have been failures by, if it's at a college, by college security, some real big fuck-ups there, and by the police. So
I'm not denying that, but my point is that there's no way a typical restraining order is going to protect a person.
Okay. Well, that's something we could definitely have a discussion about.
That'd be great.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. We have one email from good old Nate. He's always ready to suggest some good cases.
He might as well be our producer, huh?
Okay. Does he work for free?
I doubt it.
So Nate wants us to cover the Robert Meyer murder case that occurred in Sitka, Alaska. He says it hasn't been covered by any podcast. So, and just to tantalize you a little bit, in 1996, Robert Meyer contacted the Alaska Coast Guard to report that his wife and daughter had fallen overboard when their 48-foot boat had caught fire. So this was considered an unfortunate accident, although, I mean, that just sounds suspicious to me. The boat caught fire and my wife and kid fell overboard and I didn't.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, but nothing happened. And then 19 years later, so that's 2015, Meyer was charged with their murders. And I wasn't able to figure out or find out what brought the charges, but we'll look more into that. And then before his trial began, he apparently killed himself by drowning.
Huh, I wonder if he jumped off his boat.
Well, he was found off of a pier.
Okay.
I don't know if it was off his boat or what, but what a story.
Well, yeah, that's the kind of story where you need a lot of history to think what's going on here, because it's very odd.
Very.
Okay, do we know how old the daughter was? Was this a small child?
No, I believe she's like a teenager.
Okay. It brings me back to the woman and her two teenage daughters who went on a boat ride with...
With a psychopath.
Yes. His name started with an O. My brain just doesn't work. I'm sorry.
Oba or O.
Yeah, we did the case.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's one of the most horrifying cases in my mind to be out on a boat and just thrown in the water, tied up with what, like cement bricks on your feet or something? They were alive and knew what was happening when they were thrown overboard, in other words. And that to me is horrifying.
Sure is.
Just cruel. Yeah. Well, thanks, Nate. We really appreciate your case suggestion, and I'm sure he included links in his email because he's always very helpful that way.
He did. I think there's like 40 of them.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you everyone so much for listening. We really appreciate it. I hope that your time leading up to the holidays is going well, and we'll see you next time at the Quiet End.
We got some seats ready for you. Come on down.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.